This is the Living Clean Podcast. This podcast is not meant to replace meetings, sponsorship, step work, or service. This podcast is meant to be another tool in your recovery toolbox. Our guests are here to share their experience, strength, and hope with recovery through Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you for joining us. Hello, everyone, and Happy New Year. This is Mason. I'm an addict. Tonight we are doing God Walked In, which is a story that's featured in the back of the basic text in the 6th edition. The story was written in 2003 and ultimately was approved and was put into the 6th edition. We have a very unique opportunity tonight to where we are going to get to spend some time with the author and a couple of their sponsees. And we're even going to feature a newcomer tonight who you're going to hear at the beginning of this. His name is Peter. And Peter is going to read this story. So the first 10 minutes of this episode will be the reading of the story God Walked In, followed by an interview with the author, Francis and myself, and two of his sponsees. And in at the end, Peter will jump in. So this is a new format for us, something that we're trying, and we're hopeful to feature some more of the stories in the back of the book. So we really hope you enjoy. Let us know on the Facebook page if you enjoy this format, or if there's something that you would like to see us do a little different, whatever that may be. Hope you enjoy it. Here it is.
God Walked In. When I first came to Narcotics Anonymous, I didn't think I could go without drugs for 30 hours, let alone 30 years. I was terrified NA wasn't going to work for me. I had tried religion and psychiatry and the military. Being a veteran, I thought that the government would and could save me, but they couldn't. I walked into my first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous alone. Behind me was jail, hospitals, violence, foster homes, a sick mother dependent on food stamps and government welfare, and a dad who abandoned us. A couple of members took me to a house where there were other addicts living clean. I didn't eat or sleep for days, but I found the message of recovery. One of the gifts I've received in NA has been falling in love and getting married to my wife. We have been together now for 26 years, and we have been faithful to each other all these years. Before I met my wife, I was a pretty rough and reckless guy. There's no question that working the steps has helped me have a relationship with her. After we had been together for 5 years, my wife told me that she needed intimacy. I wished she had asked me for $1 million. Giving her that would have been easier for me. And at first I thought she meant sex, but it wasn't about sex. It was about sharing who I am with her. The steps have given me the courage to be honest and intimate with another human being. Narcotics Anonymous has also given me the ability not only to hold a job, but to work my way up from the bottom of a company to the position of vice president. I never got out of ninth grade, so to be vice president of an industry leader was an accomplishment. I showed up to work every day, I was disciplined, and I was trustworthy. When I went to work, it didn't matter if I was going to be accepted or promoted or hired or fired. What mattered was staying clean and trying to go with the truth I found in the steps. When I was 2 years into my job, the company hired a clinical psychologist to pick everyone's brain. I told my wife they were going to find out who I was and fire me. When I went to meet with this man, I had told myself I was going to lie. But then he started to ask me all these questions, and I ended up sharing the equivalent of my inventory with him. After it was over, I knew he was going to have to give me up. But he said that although the company executive did need to hear about what I had told him, they also needed to hear what he was going to tell them. That he had never felt the same kind of honesty and integrity that I had shared with him from anyone in his whole career. He wanted to thank me and said he would hire me in a heartbeat. I have also been blessed with opportunities to serve and give back to the fellowship. One of the most profound things that happened for me was when I had procrastinated and had no speaker for an H&I commitment, forcing me to do the panel at a hospital detox unit by myself. Even though I had clean time, I was still intimidated to go there by myself. It was a co-ed panel with dually diagnosed addicts, most of them with physical challenges, and many who were wartime vets. I was setting up the literature and taking everyone's inventory because I was afraid, and it made me feel better. A guy would walk in, and I would say to myself, I've done more than him. A woman would walk in, and I would say, she's going to think I'm weak. Finally, God walked in. And God walked in the form of a person who looked like he came from the same clan I came from. He had similar tattoos. He combed his hair in the same way. And the only difference between him and me was that he was escorted in by two orderlies. He was what they call a frozen addict. He had put a needle in his arm with synthetic heroin, and it had frozen him for his entire life. Inside this man, his mind was going a mile a minute, but on the outside he was drooling all over himself. He would never be able to speak to another person, let alone pick up the phone or write a step. How could I take this man's inventory? At that moment I knew, in a way I hadn't before, that we are all in this together, and there but for the grace of God go I. I knew that if I could do anything for that man, it would be to think of him when I feel like complaining about not wanting to do an inventory or pick up the phone. When I spoke at the detox that night, tears were coming out of his eyes. This man changed my life. When I celebrated 22 years clean, I hit a series of difficult situations. First, after being with my employer for 20 years, I was terminated in the corporate downsizing. I was given a few hours' notice, and I was gone. I felt abandoned, embarrassed, and ashamed. A week went by, and my mother-in-law, whom I loved deeply, died. My wife was then physically attacked by a family member, and it took all my strength not to attack back. I struggled to find a permanent career for about a year and a half, and my finances were seriously affected. And just when I was meeting with some executives for a big job, my eyes went crossed and I couldn't see straight. I had a stroke. In the hospital, I was told I had had three strokes due to a heart defect. I had a hole in my heart and would have to go have open heart surgery so that they could close the hole and save my life. I got real angry at God and felt like I didn't get clean to experience this misery. One more time, my sponsor reminded me that we must handle life on life's terms, and that we are blessed to have the support of a loving God and a program of recovery. After I had my open heart surgery, I was in intensive care, and there were all these tubes coming out of me. I was coming off anesthesia, and the pain was insane. I couldn't speak, and I was so thirsty. I had my family and loved ones around, but there was this one person in particular. I knew it was a male figure who seemed like he could read my mind. If I was thirsty, he would swab my mouth. When I was in pain, he rubbed my feet. Eventually, I found out this man was an addict whom I hadn't seen in many years. He had heard that I was in intensive care and worked his way through the hospital and got in with my family and just kind of took over. My family was watching this man be so loving to me. I still get emotional about it. To me, that sums up this program. I wish I could say it all got better after that. It did in a deep spiritual way, but I continued to have physical challenges. 2 years after my open heart surgery, I was diagnosed with cancer. I was still not working steadily and found out I had an aggressive cancer. I prayed and cried and talked. And then one more time, I surrendered to a loving higher power. It was so humbling and freeing at the same time. I had radical surgery and was informed that all of the cancer was gone. With all my physical challenges, one of my biggest fears was getting hooked on prescribed medication. I read In Times of Illness and had my medication monitored by my sponsor and sponsees. The miracle is that I did not get an obsession to use. Recently, I found out that the cancer has come back and that the last three readings have been higher and higher. The last time I saw the oncologist, I was told that they want me to go through 8 weeks of daily radiation. They tell me that chances are very good that I'll be cured from this cancer. I'm still surrendering. All of this has changed me profoundly. And yet, the truth is that the fear and anxiety that go along with being diagnosed with cancer and having open heart surgery pale in comparison to how I felt when I walked through the doors of NA. The fear, loneliness, and isolation that I had back then were way worse than what I'm going through right now. I've been very well supported by my friends in NA, particularly the old-timers. I did have some sponsees pull away, one who, when I told him about the cancer, jumped up and said, "How can you do this? My father did the same thing." I knew where he was coming from. He started crying and tried to leave, and I said, "This is not about you. You know that." There have definitely been challenges in dealing with all the illness. When they start taking out your prostate and your lymph nodes and other parts, having sex is an issue. What bothered me, even though my wife and I don't have children, was that I could never father children. It just blew me away. All these things were hitting me at once. I had to work on surrendering to the reality that I'm not going to have any children, that my name is not going to carry on. What I've received from this process is a deep feeling of wanting to be of service, not only to the fellowship of NA, which I love so much, but to humankind. As a result of being clean all these years, I have had the opportunity to grow older physically and experience what all human beings have to face: health issues, financial ups and downs, family and friends going through life's challenges and changes, and ultimately, facing our physical mortality. I've been blessed to move through all of life's colors over the years, but without the steps, my NA family, and the principles that I have learned, these life changes would have been much more difficult to cope with and also celebrate. I believe that the longer I'm on this planet, the more wisdom I develop. But I also believe that that wisdom deepens and I end up going full circle to a profound state of innocence, and what a freedom that innocence brings. I've been through a lot, and I want to get mad at God, but I know all of this is not about God or being mad at God. These challenges have taught me about love. The love has been the hardest thing for me to accept in my recovery. And what's even harder is accepting and giving myself that love. What a profound gift to love and be loved. I thank NA, my sponsor, and especially the 12 steps for continuing to teach me.
All right, welcome back to the Living Clean podcast. We're back for, well, this is something that's actually new. For the first time tonight, the podcast, we're going to feature one of the stories in the back of the book, God Walked In. As most of you heard, if you're just now coming in, you just got to listen to that story narrated by our man, Peter O. Without further ado, we're going to do some introductions. Obviously, I'm Mason. I'm an addict. I'm going to introduce the co-host now.
I'm Francis. I'm an addict. I'm from Chico, California. Home group is Spiritual Reality. Clean date is December 22nd, 92.
Okay. Next, we will do Arnold. Would you like to introduce yourself?
My name's Arnold M., and I'm from Palm Springs, California. My home group is AOA, and my clean date is 11/8/84.
Welcome, Arnold. Glad you're here. Okay, Pete.
Hello, I'm Pete. I'm an addict. I'm in San Diego, California. Got clean January 5th, 1986. And I'm happy to be here.
Welcome, Pete. Billy.
Yes, my name is Billy R. My home group is, I'm living in Queen Creek, Arizona. My home group is Straight from the Heart. It's a 12-step meditation meeting on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Arizona time. And my clean date is 8/10/77.
Wonderful. Yeah, we're really excited about this. I know Francis is known across the country. I'll blow his head up here a little bit, as the story guy. Like, he has this fascination with the stories in the back. It's been a goal of his to try and make contact with as many people as he could. And Francis, you jump in and help me with this, but you had a meeting, during the pandemic, and had an opportunity to interview some authors and have some people share.
Yeah, so it was a Paradise Strong book study meeting, and the secretary, when the pandemic happened, it was a book study meeting up in Paradise, and it was the first meeting to get back into the burn scar after the campfire. And then we had to shut it right back down for the pandemic. And the secretary is like, oh my God, what are we going to do? Nobody's going to want to come to a book study on Zoom. I'm like, well, I know some of the authors. They're like, why don't we invite them? And it kind of like authors, you're like, hey, have you gotten Mark from Arizona? I'm like, no, I haven't gotten him out of, you know, like, so that you were outed by one of the other authors, Billy, but it just kind of like tumbled into the next one. And, you know, like I was listening for clues and I was reading the stories and trying to figure out where they're at. And we had about 40, I think we had 40 authors from the basic text, fifth and sixth edition. So it was pretty exciting times, you know, like, for the history of Narcotics Anonymous, not only the front of the book, but the back of the book. So
I guess without further ado, I know the first question that I have, Billy, would be, what was the process like? Maybe you can walk me through, because I wasn't around back when they were putting this would be the sixth edition together. Did the fellowship ask for stories from throughout the fellowship to be submitted? Is that kind of how that happened?
Yes, it was, Mason. And not unlike the way when the book was first written, I'll just regress. I'll go back to that back in, I think it was 79. You know, I had a couple of years clean. And the word came down to the meeting level asking for stories. And you know, at that time, my ego wanted me to submit a story, you know. but then again, I was also afraid, but concerned that if I did send it in and didn't get chosen, I'd have to deal with that rejection. So, but anyway, to answer your question, yes, I think it was in 2003, I believe, where I got a call from the World Service Office from one of the writers saying that they, you know, the board had voted on certain people to, you know, be interviewed to share their stories. And I was one of them, which was obviously it was an honor and privilege. And I was blown away with it. So, yeah, they said that what they would want to do is set me up with a series of interviews. On the phone, telephonic interviews, to ask me some questions. And then I think after the second interview, they asked me to write out and to email them, so many words. I forget how many words it was that they asked me to put together. So that's what I did. And from then they edited it. And we went from there. And if I could just say, I don't want to ramble on. I know you have other questions, but, you know, it's interesting. I had never been in that process before. And things that I thought that in my story that were important, you know, to me and to get out, a lot of them they kept in. But some of them, you know, they took out and edited and asked me certain questions were pretty thought-provoking and emotionally charged, frankly, and which were good, that they wanted to see in the book. And so I went ahead and answered those questions, and they transcribed it, and that's how it went.
So you are involved in the editing process? Like when they complete an edit, would they send it to you or let you see it, or how did that work?
Yeah. From what I can remember, there wasn't that many edits back and forth. I think that it was, they called me after reading the story and they wanted some clarification on some certain, you know, issues in the story. And then they asked me, they said, listen, we want to remove this. We'd like to change this. And then they asked me some questions about myself personally, particularly about my marriage and not having children and things like that, that it was pretty insightful for them to, or for her to kind of drill down into my heart, so to speak, Not that I, wasn't there. It's just that, I needed someone to really, you know how it is. You can't see the forest for the trees when you're writing your own story and you're in your own head. And so that's what happened. So they edited it down, and it took a couple of times, and then they sent me the final draft, and we went with it.
That's very interesting. I guess my next question would be is what was kind of the thought process, like when you did they you had said they reached out to you and asked you for a story. So it wasn't like a bunch of people had submitted. They personally reached out to you and wanted the story. So what was the thought process about just sitting down and actually trying to summarize your life up until that point into this, well, it takes 10 minutes to read it, this 10-minute reading. What was kind of the process? Was it difficult? Did you find it that it kind of flowed pretty easy?
Yeah, Mason, great question. As you're asking, I'm thinking back on what that was like. And they did give me some parameters. They gave me some guidelines, and that was so many words to write. And I wanted to obviously, follow their direction. And so they did also give me some, when I said, what is it that, do you want something that's current? And they said, well, we do want that, but we want to know a little bit about your history and your process, your walk through recovery. I think I had 30 years clean when I was asked to write this. And that was, 17 years ago, 18 years ago. I think I was around then. So, yeah, that was it. I took it in three pieces personally, what it was like in the beginning, and to try to stay away from a lot of war stories, and then, what has been the road, what were some of the major issues that I faced, and then where I was at that moment today, which in the story, at that moment, I was, battling, for the lack of a better word, cancer. I had had, some surgery and some radiation, and it came back. And so, that's pretty much where it was at.
One of the things I really like about the sixth edition stories is that they have so much more depth than the other stories. It might be like akin to this podcast we were talking about at the like before we started recording, that this is our prototype and we'll work it out, like in the other stories. But these sixth edition stories, like there's so much more to them. Sometimes there's stories within stories. For instance, I really kind of connected with, like, I'm always a sucker for an H&I story. And I really kind of connected with the Frozen Man and what that was like for you. And then later on in this story, it talked about you being in the hospital and you being kind of like the Frozen Man being taken care of by your sponsees, mm-hmm. or one of your sponsees while you're in the hospital. And so that was pretty meaningful. And then I kind of almost thought it could be viewed as a metaphor for people that are reading it too. How are we frozen? How are we frozen in our own recovery? Are you stuck on a four step? Mm-hmm. Are you struggling in your relationship with intimacy? There's all kinds of things you can get frozen with. So that's some of the thoughts I had about the Frozen Man. Am I the Frozen Man? I guess that's a question I need to ask myself, but I really appreciated your story within the story and then reflecting back on how you were having to be taken care of in the hospital too. So that was, right. It was kind of a really neat story.
Well, Francis, I never looked at it that way, but it gives me chills just you saying it, taking myself out of the situation. I can relate and really hear what you're saying on that big time. So you're right. I think we've, I know in the recovery that I've had since then, this past 16, 17 years, life has shown up. And yeah, I've been frozen, no question, for sure.
One of the other things I was thinking about, it talked about one of your sponsees taking care of you while you were in the hospital. And I, that must have been really challenging to having had cancer and then and get through the other side of that, but also lose your wife to cancer. And that must have been a real difficult process for you, because I know you were married to her for such a long time. And like, I know we have some of your sponsees with us now, and I imagine they probably walked you through some of that as well.
Boy, please. And first of all, before they share, I want to say, not only am I, very humble to be here, but to see these two gentlemen, really three, but the two that are going to be asking questions that I sponsor. You're right. Like they said, when I first came around in Narcotics Anonymous, that NA, never alone. These two men here went through the storm with me. And I'll say this hopefully without getting emotional. And if I do, I do. And what can you say then? What closer bond is there than to go through a war, so to speak, that analogy of combat and surrender that would bond two human beings closer? And that's how I feel about these gentlemen on the call. So
I know it's you can see it's kind of getting me already, because that scenario is very near and dear to me. The love that my father's sponsees showed to my father when he was in the hospital sick with cancer while I was still in active addiction is the reason why I'm here today. I said, I don't know what the hell that is, but my God, I want that. So when I read that and hear your story, I mean, it touches me, because and then to hear about your sponsees, because that's the reason why I'm here. The love they showed my father is the reason why I'm clean today. It's the reason it was what was attractive. I didn't know how the hell I was going to do it or where to even start. But anyways, how about a sponsee question? Let's ask Arnold first. Arnold, won't you come in and talk about, I guess before we touch on the story, just talk about Billy for a second. I could tell by the, in the beginning before we started recording, that the way that you go back and forth, it's obviously some time invested into this relationship. So what has Billy meant to you over the years?
I can start by saying it seems as though through the process of people losing people in the rooms and sort of gathering around them, Billy was kind of that guy. He was always around as we were coming together to either see somebody through their illness or to send them off, into their next chapter. I have to tell you, when I met Billy, I think Bob Raymer was at Barb. I didn't meet him there. I met him once again. Like I said, I met him at another memorial. it was Hank's memorial. And I saw him and I hugged him, and somebody took a picture of us hugging, and I just held on to that picture for a while. I was sponsored by another guy who died of cancer, and he was really losing his connection to the rooms and wouldn't let anybody in. This was Craig. When Craig was dying, he didn't want anyone around. He didn't want people to come to the room. Whereas when Mike Poland was dying, he wanted everybody there. He wanted the room full. He wanted to see everyone. He wanted to be surrounded. So everyone has a different story. But Billy was around when his sponsor was dying, and I was at that memorial, and my sponsor had just died, and I was struggling with the sponsor, and I saw Billy walking down the hallway at the Marriott in Wilton Hills, and I just started weeping for no reason. I weeped and I hugged him and I said, this has got to be the guy. There was something, some spiritual connection there. So We have this light banter to keep it light because it seems so, when we're together, it seems very, very heavy and very strong. And, like I have to break the ice in some way, so that I don't, get too emotional. It's a very emotional connection, is all I can say, I guess. And I've walked with Billy through the loss of his wife, and witnessing that, and being there as a guy who would rub his feet as this other guy did, or would pat his head or stroke his heart. And he does the same for us all. He does the same for all of us. I was afraid to ask him to sponsor me at that time because of the fact that he had been through the heart surgery and the cancer and the stuff. And I'm like, and I'd lost three sponsors prior to that to cancer. So when I ran into Billy and I heard about his history, I was like, ooh, no, I don't know if I can do this. I've been killing them off like flies, here. So you better be careful. You don't want to sponsor me. But he said, no, I'm in good shape, and I can handle you, and we can take care of each other through this process. So I'm grateful to Billy for my recovery and the fact that we've had, what, maybe 20 years now, plus 20 years. And I just wouldn't have it any other way. And that's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you, Arnold. All right, Pete, I'd ask you to come. How is your relationship with Pete, and what's that been like? I mean, with Billy, I'm sorry.
Knew what you meant. And I just want to start by saying thanks for the invitation. And Francis, you and Mason are doing an amazing job here. Very well thought out and prepared. I appreciate it. I met Billy in 1986, which was the year I got clean this time. We were both in the Redondo Beach area, and as it happened, Billy took me on my first panel, which was at the detox where the story about the frozen addict took place. It wasn't obviously wasn't that night because he was alone that night. And I was very impressed that his commitment to service and the way he showed up and represented himself. And there's one line that he used that I won't really repeat, but it was kind of hip and slangy, and it stuck with me through the years. And it just was one of these kind of hip, slick, and cool kind of expressions where I knew this guy had some heart and had been on the street. And again, one of Billy's gifts is always being vulnerable. So by coming out and opening with him being at odds with the program and him being judgmental and leery about who was in the rooms, not only did it make me feel comfortable, which he continues to do. Okay. Billy, one of his great gifts is his vulnerability. And maybe we have Kathy to thank for that, as he writes about in his story. But what he has brought to recovery, and I'm digressing from this story about how I met him. He was a running partner with my sponsor at the time, a guy named Ham Moorhead, and they were thick as thieves. And Billy was just one of the cats on the scene who I really looked up to. And we stayed friends over the years. And I will just add that I eventually asked him to sponsor me as we sat around Ham's deathbed. And I couldn't think of a better person. And when I saw the way that Billy showed up for Ham, and what impressed me in that moment, if you know Billy, his theme, one of his themes of recovery, one of his main offerings as he shares is just show up, and he keeps showing up. This is a guy who goes to any lengths to be there for other people. I mean, he has been all over the country in the last 2 months celebrating recovery anniversaries for people. He goes all over to visit people and show up in the hospital. And when I'd spent the last few weeks of Ham's life with him, and Billy was out of town and got there the night he died, But he came in and what he said was, "What can I do for you?" And to me, this is a depth of selflessness and compassion where it's not about him. It's all about how he's showing up and what can I offer here? What's the medicine I can offer? And Billy is, I see him as one of the great healers in Narcotics Anonymous. And you know, you spoke about the difference in the stories in the sixth edition from the early stories. Well, that's because our fellowship is a changing culture. And in the beginning, we didn't know about emotional recovery. And we have learned to work the steps deeper and deeper over the decades. And this is a quality that Billy has brought to all of us who have heard him and been around him, is the quality of his intimacy, his emotional vulnerability. And also these are things he talked about in the story, his honesty and integrity. Even the way he started here tonight with some vulnerability by expressing a fear he had. To me, this is like, this creates the powerhouse that we have in recovery, where we're sharing vulnerability as our strength and touching each other's hearts and making it safe for us to all be real together. And Francis spoke about the frozen addict and the qualities of frozenness, and Billy's big heart and love and compassion is the warmth that helps us all thaw and keep peeling the layers that we've built up around our hearts, not only in active addiction, but the layering of my heart and my habit energy in recovery that I develop. And this is part of my great love for the man, is that when we speak, he listens so deeply with ears in his heart, not just in his head. He knows how to be an active listener and fully present. And when he shares, he's able to really share from his heart directly. It's not about fixing. It's not about book thumping. It's about hearts touching hearts. And the takeaway for me here is what he shared in the book that was so beautiful in his story about how the challenges taught love, how the challenges taught him love. And when you hear Billy share, and he's a wonderful speaker who has shared all over the world, he usually or often starts about saying that he wants to share the love stories, not the war stories. And I really so appreciate this, because in the end, love is kind of my practical understanding of the word God, and our capacity to love and be loved and to grow our ability to love the unlovable is the work of sponsorship and recovery for me. And Billy helps me immensely with that. And maybe that's enough for now.
All right, thank you, Pete. Billy, one thing I want to ask you is, there's a part in your story where you talk about the opportunity to grow older physically and experience what all human beings have to face, health issues, financial ups and downs, family and friends going through life challenges and changes, and ultimately facing our physical mortality. What I want to ask you is this was, what, 21 years ago or so. Did you imagine, even at this point, 30 years clean when you say you were 30 years clean when you wrote this story, did you imagine the life that you had in front of you after this story? And what is those challenges been since the story's been released, like growing older, you know, physically and health issues and ups and downs and going through life's challenges?
Yeah. Wow. Well, to answer the question, you know, at the time when it was written, I still had cancer, and the jury was still out, you know, whether or not I would still be here. And as both Pete and Arnold had shared, and you all on the screen, life shows up, and we don't all, you know, make it through. And so, to answer your question, I'm really surprised that I'm here, for sure. in that sense. To, you know, going further, you know, I want to share this, that, yeah, life has shown up for sure. You know, my wife, as Francis was sharing and as Pete Arnold shared, you know, I was married 40 years to the same woman. She was a normie. You know, she didn't have our disease. And I used to joke and say, well, how normal could she be, you know, being with me? You know, she, at least I have an excuse. You know, I'm an addict, you know. When I was first walked in the doors of Narcotics Anonymous, I had a sponsor who Pete had mentioned. His name was Hank M., Hank Magdaleno. What really a wise man. And I want to share this in relation to your question, that he had asked me when we were starting to work the steps, and, you know, he said, so Billy, what do you think you're going to use over? What do you think could happen in life that's going to make you want to put a needle in your arm or drink or whatever? And I really, I thought about it for a moment, and, you know, he was talking to a man that was new, that was full of fear and didn't understand what words really meant. I couldn't sort through my emotions and my feelings. I couldn't compute what, you know, I equated most of everything that happened in my life to either fear or anger or shame, those three feelings. And so I answered the question by saying, well, maybe if my mother dies, you know, I might use, you know, and my mother was sick all my life, you know, and I, because I didn't have much else going on at that time. Well, fast forward, you know, that and, you know, physical, emotional things have happened. And since I wrote the story, to answer your question, Mason, you know, I've buried my wife, obviously, and I lost a brother to suicide, who I love very much, a younger brother. And I know I wasn't alone, and I'm not alone in life's, I don't call them tragedies, life's happenings, you know. So those type things have happened to me. And I've never once wanted to pick up, you know, or to use drugs from it, man, you know. You know, have I wanted to, like, leave the planet in the year since then and even before that? Sure. Yeah, I didn't want to be here anymore because I was in so much turmoil and pain. And thank God for the people on this screen and for me working a program. I took it 5 minutes at a time and really practiced what was being taught to me here in the 12 steps and in sponsorship, right? And that this too shall pass, that when you're hurting and you need to hear, you need to have a voice, you need to hear a voice. You need to be there for another addict suffering more than you. And so that's what's kind of got me through. You know, I believe, and I'm sure you've heard this before, but I'll just share it, that there's really, in my experience and of many others that I sponsor and people I see, is that, you know, I think there's three major phases that we go through. And the first one is that we got to get clean, right? And, you know, getting clean when you're not clean is a monumental task. One that is, you don't believe is going to be able to be true for you. It happens to other people. The second phase is that we stay clean once we get clean. And staying clean is a wonderful thing. And a lot of things happen. You get jobs, you meet people, you meet wives, you have children and all that. But then there's the phase that we need, that we get into, and that is we live clean. And, you know, living clean was different than staying clean for me. And it came, when it came to me, it came at 19 years clean, I had a nervous breakdown. And I was doing everything right, I thought. I sponsored 20 people, 20 men. I was managing 18 private country clubs and resorts. And I never got out of the ninth grade, man. I never went to high school, really. And so what Narcotics Anonymous had given to me was the ability to be a productive a member of society, you know. And so with that said, and I had a relationship with my wife and family, and here I am at 19 years wanting to leave the planet in a serious way. It was horrible. And I didn't realize that I was on the precipice. I was walking through the door of living clean, and it was really painful. I tend now, and looking at it, it wasn't that I was that I was having a nervous breakdown. I was having, as I say, a nervous breakthrough. You've heard that. And then even further than that, it was more of a nervous break in to my soul, into my heart, into who I was. And with that said, it launched me on a journey that I'm still on now, that it's hard to put into words. And I know you've experienced that. And that journey was, yes, getting into to nurturing little Billy, to getting into looking at ancestral stuff that I didn't even realize was part of my core, my being, my DNA. And it all came, and it's been said, it all came back to something very simple that I think all of humanity has been talking about forever, and that is love. And that is, you know, love yourself. For me to really, and how does that look? It can be as simple as using the good towels, as I share, you know, instead of going through the stack of torn towels or frayed towels so that my wife could use them or my friends could use them. I said to myself, Billy, why can't you use that towel? Wearing a seatbelt, when I tell everybody else to wear seatbelts, my nieces, you know, and then I get in the car and something as simple as putting a seatbelt from here to here, I don't do. And I said, Billy, what about you? Why don't you, is it good for everybody else? Why don't you love yourself? So loving myself came and still does. It's real simple. You know, they say that the longer we stay clean, the simpler it gets, you know, the less complicated it gets. I don't know so much if that's for age. I'm 72 years old, you know, or if that's just, you know, having gone through this situation with, you know, having this nervous breakdown. So I don't know if that's a long way of answering your question about what's happened, you know, since then.
No, that was great. Pete, I seen you nodding your head the whole time that he was talking. When you go through something in your own personal life, or maybe even have a sponsee go through something, is there little things from Billy that kind of ring in your ear about, this is what I need to say in this situation, or this is what Billy would say? Do you have that little voice in your head? I know sometimes I can hear my sponsor's voice before I ever reach out and talk to him.
Well, I certainly have voices in my head. But when I think of Billy and I'm in those situations, it's more about leaving the head and making the journey to the heart. And what wise friends like Arnold and Billy and Jimmy Smith have taught me is that when we make that trip from the head to the heart, we don't leave the head behind, we bring it with us to the heart, okay? And then eventually maybe we even bring our gut to the heart. And that's how Billy shows up so wholeheartedly. So I remember, what I remember about my sponsor is that I don't need to have answers and I don't need to fix anything. I just need to show up and be as fully present as I can. And you know, Arnold mentioned how deep and intimate and real our interactions with Bill are. And he also mentioned on the flip side, just so you know, this guy is a total character and still pretty nuts. And I don't mean nuts like dysfunctional. I mean, he is like a kid and he's got a streak of craziness and mischief and fun lovingness in him that reminds me to show up and enjoy life too, as seriously as I take it and as committed as all of us are, including all of you here by doing this work, to carrying the message and helping others find freedom, not only freedom from active addiction, but freedom from all our afflictions. So yeah, I call on Billy's spirit, and I'll add that he spoke about being put on the couch at this house when he was brand new, and that was Hank Magdaleno's house. And Hank was one of my sponsors, and Ham was best friends with Billy. And while technically, after Bobby Raymar died, who Hank had sponsored in the early days, after Bobby died, Ham wound up asking Billy to sponsor him. So there's so many cross channels here, and in a way, like we do for each other, Arnold and I sponsor each other too in a very real way, because we become continuations of Bill and Craig and the other people who have touched our hearts and shown us how to live. And that's one of the things Bill does regularly is he mentions the names of his other sponsors. He recognizes the empty chair in the room as being the chair, not only for the newcomer, but for all who came before us and are no longer here. So I think more than the voices and the phrases, I'm a jazz musician and I want to show up and be present and bring what the moment invites. And that's so much of what Billy models for me. I hope that answers the question.
Thank you, Pete. Arnold, Billy throughout his story and throughout sharing tonight has talked about his story at the end is all about love. And he talked about those struggles. You know, the hardest person sometimes to love is himself. Do you relate with that any? Have you learned through some of his struggles on how to apply that to yourself as well?
Without a doubt. I have grown so much as a man since I've been with Billy and learning how to love myself because I have, most of my life, I've dealt with sexual compulsion. And as a gay man, Billy sponsors us, you know, sponsors me the same way he would sponsor any other man. He sponsors the man. He doesn't sponsor someone who does something else or has relationships with any other kind of guy. He sponsors me the way he would sponsor just any other human being. He doesn't any time ancestral or trauma or any of that stuff that comes up for me, Billy just sort of comes back to the place of love. And that, and I've learned to literally share with sponsees and friends and struggling in recovery that God is simply love and that love is simply God and you are God and God is you. And there's no difference, you know? So when I'm looking for God, I go within. And when I'm looking for you, the God in you, I look in your eyes and I can see that. And I learned that through Billy. And it was so wonderful to read this last line about what a profound gift to love and be loved. And I thank NA, my sponsor, and especially the 12 steps for continuing to teach me. I've done at least two rounds of steps with Billy. I'm in the middle of another one. You know, I wanted to make sure I was, you know, doing the steps as I'm moving from into my fourth decade of recovery. I want to be in the steps. I want to be in the solution. And I've got a sponsee who openly shares that I've stopped trying to label my God, and I just call it love. So the love of my understanding, he says, you know, he just literally replaces wherever you have God, replace it with love, and it works just fine.
I've really enjoyed listening to you guys talk about Billy and how much he loves and his ability to be vulnerable. I was thinking about the title of the story, God Walked In, and what you like in context to like when you first talked about that was being humbled by the frozen addict. But, you know, like Arnold was talking about God is love, you know, like so if you turn it into love walked in, you know, like that could be a sponsee, you know, like walking you through a difficult time. That could be you walking one of your sponsees through a difficult time back and forth, or just any addict, you know, like that's anonymous is unconditional love. You know, like, so treating everybody unconditionally loving is, you know, like walking God in. And so super, super deep and very loving conversation about you. I did want to give our newcomer an opportunity to say something. You know, like I invited Peter O to be here to be a fly on the wall, but he's had his basic text open the whole time. And so maybe he's earned a shot at saying something.
Well, thank you, Francis. Hey, my name is Peter O. I'm a grateful recovering addict.
Peter.
I should just say real quick, I live in Chico, California. My clean date is August 18th, 2024. And my home group is Chico Narcotics Anonymous here in Chico, California. And I just want to say, first of all, I mean, this is such an incredibly moving experience to just witness this, to just be able to reflect on this story and see, you know, the relationship that you all have with Billy and the way in which you clearly love each other and support each other. I mean, for me, like this story is just, you know, so incredibly powerful, and I'm so thankful because, you know, it really illustrates the way in which, you know, there's no mistakes in God's will, you know, that the experience of seeing the frozen man, like that was kind of like preparing you for what was to come, you know, and the way in which surrender to these things that happened, you know, I think made it possible to encounter that with love and to be able to love yourself and love others. And it just really speaks to my experience working the first three steps. I'm on step four now. You know, I was always looking for love in active addiction. And I think, you know, understanding that surrender is our first act of love, you know, that we let go of the fear with the possibility that we might be able to love ourselves. And that opens up something in us. And, you know, eventually, you know, we experience the love of a higher power. You know, the higher power is the greatest source of love. It's a love that is more powerful than anything we can ever experience. And that then, you know, we continually have to surrender and replace the things that surrender opens up in us with love, you know, because I think, you know, as I grow older and I start to encounter more and more, you know, health issues, you know, I'm still pretty young and pretty healthy, but, you know, the greatest things we have to surrender to are, you know, aging, illness, and death. You know, we're absolutely powerless over those things, all of us. And I just, you know, like others have said, I was just incredibly moved by, you know, the ending of the story where, you know, where you said just what a profound gift to love and be loved. Because I think that that's all we can hope for at the moment that we pass from this earth, you know, just to experience love for ourselves and to know that we've loved others. You know, so I don't really have a question or anything. It was just profoundly moving. And it really, in my early recovery, it gives me a lot of really great things to think about, and a great source of strength. So I just want to say thank you.
Oh, thank you, Peter.
Thank you so much, Peter. My God, I would have been scared to death. I would have been scared. That's a little Tennessee term for you. Scared to death. Yeah. Billy, before we close, I'd like to give you an opportunity to just kind of a couple of things, just kind of talk about where your life's at today, like the current state of your recovery and life in general. And the last thing I would ask is just, you know, what would you say to a newcomer, you know, that may be listening to this, that's, you know, looking for that God shot or God to walk in?
Sure. So where I'm at now is I'm pretty much retired, semi-retired. Never thought I'd mention those words or be able to be here long enough to say that. But as was said earlier, you know, this past, you know, my wife passed away 40 years, 3 years ago, just over 3 years ago. And so as a result of that, I've been really having to go inside of who I am, and she lives within me, you know. So, it's easy to say that, but to really feel it is such a gift. I talking about gifts, I am now in another relationship with a woman named Mindy, who has got she's been in the program for 35 years now, and I have to pinch myself to say how could this happen to me twice? And not to replace my wife, Kathy, but to have another human being with integrity and program and love to be willing to spend her time and life with me. So that's pretty much, you know, where I'm at as far as, you know, relationship-wise and emotionally. Emotionally, you know, I'm doing well. I have to say though that, you know, I'm human, as you know, as most of us are. And you know, I think if I had if there's anything I'm not so much grappling with, but having to surrender to, is growing old, you know, and doing it gracefully. We have a choice. I never thought I had a choice, you know, but we do. And how we look at life and what life brings to us. And I'm living now on a little ranchette with four horses and a donkey. And, you know, you have to be careful. You know, I don't know about you folks, but everything that I've ever judged in the past usually comes back to haunt me, you know. And I say that only because, as Pete was sharing about Hamilton, who was, you know, my best friend ever, when he moved out and ended up with a horse and one donkey, I said, geez, you know, Ham, what's going on, man? You know, you're a cowboy. And so I made fun of him. Well, guess what? It came back fourfold, fivefold for me. I'm grateful for that. Where I'm headed is I'm getting, as Arnold had shared, I'm getting into a deeper sense of, I can't really articulate it, but it feels good, exciting, about where I'm headed, spiritually, frankly. And as I said, it's hard to articulate, you know, but as we talked about, love is getting deeper in a different meaning. You know, I've, you know, as I said, been around a while, and I share about, you know, one, you know, it's a simple program, and let me say this simply, that you know, I believe that, you know, we can become so wise around this program and in life in general, whether you're an addict or not, that we become so wise that it really comes full circle and morphs into innocence. And I believe innocence is where my God resides, where my love resides, in innocence, spontaneity. And I share this story about Rachel Elizabeth, true story, age 8 years old, when her mother asked her, Rachel Elizabeth, what have you learned so far in the 8 years you've been on the planet? And, you know, what comes out of kids' mouths can be, you know, blow you away, you know. And she said, well, Mom, after thinking about it for a few seconds, I guess, and she says, you know, Mom, what I've learned so far in life is that if I want something really, really bad, I have to keep my room clean all week. And, you know where I'm going with that one, where the analogy is that, hey, how do I keep my room clean? And that's in loving Billy. That's in taking care of my body. And am I perfect at it? No. But am I aware of it all the time? For sure. You know, and that's, and also how I do that is by, as Pete and Arnold share every day in their lives, and Jimmy as well. And I'm sure you folks, is that we're of service to other people. It's not about us, man. You know, we're all connected, man. We're all one. And I have, and I think that is, Mason, to answer the question, now that I'm talking my way through it, is that I'm really getting a sense, a deep sense of oneness and wholeness. And I can say this without catching feelings, man, what a profound gift that is, man. I mean, you know, it's something that it's hard to put into words, money couldn't buy. And it's something that I got through Narcotics Anonymous, working the steps, being courageous, and showing up for other people, which in fact, you know, shows up for me. So I don't know if that answers your question, but, you know, thank you for asking.
Yeah, no, that was great. And at this time, I just want to thank all of our guests, Arnold, Pete, Billy, Peter, my co-host Francis. This is our, like you said, this is trial and error for us. So when you listen to this episode and if there's something about the format you would like us to try the next time, let us know. I don't think you're going to be disappointed. If nobody got anything out of it, I certainly did. So I appreciate all of you for taking the time and coming on and talking about your story and sharing your experience, strength, and hope. We will be back next week with another episode. See you then.
Thank you for joining us on our Living Clean podcast. This is another platform that we can share our message of recovery, which is an addict, any addict, to stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Join that No Matter What club. You can contact us through text. The number is 931-306-9364.